Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on today's program is Dan Pink, author of a large number of best-selling books, including A Whole New Mind. Today we're going to talk about his book entitled Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. Welcome to Edgewise, Dan.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Drive is based on four decades of scientific research on human motivation. Can you describe that research?
It's interesting. We have this notion that the way that individuals perform better, the way people in our companies perform better, is with carrots and sticks. You reward the behavior you want, you punish the behavior you don't want, because rewarding behavior gets you more of it, punishing gets you less of it. And that's basically been the orthodoxy, the conventional view in most businesses. For the last 40 years, scientists around the world have scrutinized that. Laboratory experiments, field studies, and what they found is that it actually is true some of the time. Many times when you reward behavior, you get more of it, and you punish it, you get less of it. But it's not true all the time. In fact, it's actually true less often than we think.
And what exactly does that suggest?
That has huge implications for business and management. 40, 50 years of science shows this very clearly. For relatively simple, straightforward work, mechanical work, what psychologists call algorithmic work, routine work, where you're following a set of rules, following a recipe, racing to the correct answer. Everything from turning the same screw the same way on an assembly line to stuffing envelopes to adding up columns of figures. The classic sort of motivator we use inside of organizations, if you do this, then you get that, works pretty well. Gets people to focus, eliminates distractions, barrel straight ahead.
Okay.
The challenge is, the science is equally clear that for more complex, creative, conceptual work, if-then motivators just don't work very well. Sometimes they even backfire. So what we have here is a motivational system built for routine mechanical work when fewer and fewer people, particularly in the United States and Western Europe, are doing that kind of work. And what we really need is a fundamentally different motivational operating system, one that's centered less on carrots and sticks and more on what science tells us leads to enduring motivation for creative conceptual work.
Okay, that's an interesting point. What did you find?
What works better, it turns out, from the science are three key elements: autonomy, mastery, and purpose.
Right.
Autonomy is self-direction, giving people greater sovereignty over their work. We have this notion that it's better if managers control people. The problem is you can manage people into compliance, get people to do what you want them to do the way you want them to do it, but it's very difficult to manage people into engagement. The way people engage is by getting there under their own steam through self-direction. So autonomy calls for notching up the autonomy that people have over various aspects of their work, over their time, when they do what they do, over their team, who they do it with, over their technique, how they do it, and over the task itself, what they actually do. The second one is mastery, our desire to get better and better at something that matters. We like to get better at stuff for the simple reason that we like getting better at stuff. It's inherently enjoyable. And unfortunately, our organizations aren't very well configured to help people make progress, putting them in positions where they can make progress, recognizing that progress, celebrating that progress, giving people feedback so they can make progress. Turns out from some research that making progress, achieving mastery, is one of the, if not the most motivating thing at work. And finally is purpose, the very human desire to be part of something larger than ourselves, to understand the context of what we're doing, make a contribution.
Right.
Awakening the sense of purpose, letting people know a little bit more about why what they're doing matters and why it contributes to the world can be a very effective performance enhancer. And so for the complex, conceptual, creative, more sophisticated work that most everyone is doing today, we've woefully oversold carrots and sticks, and we need to move toward greater autonomy, mastery, and purpose.
All right. In the book, you talk about behaviors, type I and type X.
Two of the kinds of motivation that psychologists write about are intrinsic and extrinsic motivation.
And what are they?
Intrinsic motivation is you do something because you want to do it, it's enjoyable, it's inherently satisfying. Extrinsic motivation means you do it for the external validation, the prize, the promotion, the money, the accolades. Type I and type X is just a shorthand way of describing sets of behaviors. Type X behavior, X for extrinsic, means you're doing things more for the outside rewards than the inherent satisfaction. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't enjoy any aspect of your work, but it means that what's really powering it are these external motivators. Type I is the reverse. You're doing what you're doing because you want to do it. Now, it doesn't mean that you disdain all extrinsic rewards. It doesn't mean you don't cash your paycheck. It doesn't mean you don't accept a promotion or anything like that. It just means that sort of the source of energy, what's powering it all. So type I for intrinsic desires at the center, type X for extrinsic desires at the center. And it turns out that the type I behavior is a far more effective way to achieve life satisfaction.
That's interesting.
In terms of the actual performance, type I might be a better route to especially long-term performance than type X. And there's a paradox in a way that in many cases, the people who receive the extrinsic rewards are people who are not doing it for those rewards, but are doing it for the intrinsic reasons.
Dan, is there some relationship between these behaviors and transactional leadership and transformational leadership?
Sure. Transactional is very much type X, and transformational is very much type I. The nature of a transaction is that it is somewhat algorithmic and routine. The nature of a transformation is that it's more of a step change. It's more of a big, bold iteration of something new. So I think that's a great connection.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some strategies that we can use to awaken our own intrinsic motivation.
One of the ideas which is reasonably well known is this notion of flow, those moments when the challenge is so exquisitely matched to our capabilities that we're in the zone. Time is melting away. Our sense of self is melting away.
Uh-huh.
It's important to understand when we're having those kinds of moments.
And how do you do that?
If people were to set their watch to randomly go off 8 times a day and each time it goes off, write down what you're doing and whether you're in flow, whether you're having that kind of transcendent moment. Do it for a week and see what it's like. I think you begin to notice some patterns about what are you doing? Where are you? What sorts of tasks are you involved in when you're experiencing those moments of flow? There are all kinds of exercises to isolate one's purpose. One of my favorites comes from a popular, famous, and possibly apocryphal political story. The Republican Congresswoman Clare Boothe Luce goes in to see a very young President Kennedy in the early 1960s and says, "Mr. President, you don't understand something very important about leadership." He says, "What's that?" She says, "You don't understand," and these are her words, "a great man is a sentence." And he says, "Well, what does that mean?" She says, "Anybody who's ever achieved anything lasting isn't focused on doing 19 or 20 different small things and racing around like a crazy person, but is focused on doing one or two really big, transcendent, lasting things." And if you think about the great presidents, you could describe each one's accomplishments in a sentence. Abraham Lincoln's sentence would be, "He preserved the Union and freed the slaves." Or Franklin Roosevelt's would be, "He lifted us out of a Great Depression and helped us win a world war." And she said, "Mr. President, you don't have a sentence. You have this convoluted, muddy paragraph. You're going to do a bunch of little things, but you're not really going to do anything big." I think that lesson offers us some pretty good guidance. And we should all be asking ourselves, what's your sentence? When it's all said and done, what's it about? Can you distill what your purpose is to a single sentence? It's a tough exercise, but it can be really effective in awakening one's individual sense of purpose.
Now, in your book, you have this concept of type I, 9 ways to improve your company or office or even group.
Oh, yeah, there's so many good ideas that companies are doing. I'll tell you about one of my favorites.
All right.
It comes from an Australian software company called Atlassian. Once a quarter on Thursday afternoons, they say to their software developers, "Go work on anything you want. Do it the way you want. Do it with whomever you want. Do whatever you want. The only thing we ask is that you show what you've created to the rest of the company on Friday afternoon in this fun, freewheeling meeting." They call these things FedEx days because you have to deliver something overnight. It turns out that that one day of intense, undiluted autonomy has led to a whole array of fixes for existing software, a whole array of ideas for new products, a whole array of ideas for improvements to internal processes that had otherwise never emerged.
That's a terrific one.
This is not a traditional carrot dangling in front of someone saying, "If you do something great, I'll give you this reward." Instead, it's saying, "You probably want to do something good, so let me get out of your way." And you see those kinds of practices emerging all over the economy. Intuit, another software company, does 10% time, where people can spend 10% of their time working on whatever they want. Their company still owns the intellectual property rights, so it's not a charitable act.
And what happened there?
The head of innovation at Intuit told me, when they tried to move toward doing more mobile applications of their software for phones and other kinds of portable devices, the team doing 10% time created 7 mobile apps before the official teams even got started.
Wow.
You see it in a company like Twitter. Twitter in October had Hack Week, where people were told, don't work on your regular job, work on whatever else you want. So those kinds of practices, whether it's a FedEx day or a Hack Week or 10% time, are really, really powerful. They offer us ways to use the power of autonomy to get people to do some breakthrough work.
Now, in the book, you talk about how to pay people the Type I way. Why don't you tell us about that?
Money is a very important motivator. This is not a case that money doesn't matter. Money matters a lot. But the main thing with money is you're never going to get it perfect. There's always going to be glitches and externalities and unintended consequences. What science shows is that the best approach is to pay people enough so they're not thinking about money. They're thinking about doing their work. And once you do that, focus on autonomy, mastery, and purpose. So there is a paradox here, is that the best use of money in some ways is to reduce the salience of money, increase the salience of the work itself. That's how compensation works best. It's fair to, after the fact, in an unexpected, non-contingent way, give people a bonus or pat on the back or anything like that. But when we dangle these kinds of rewards in front of people, it's just another form of control. And human beings don't do their best work when they're being controlled.
Dan, do you have any concluding thoughts before we wrap up the program? Anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah. The goal of this book is to give people the science, to introduce them to a whole array of best practices of companies around the world that are taking a radically different approach to motivation, and to give people all kinds of tools and tips and exercises to bring some of these ideas to life in their own home, in their own work, and in their own company.
We've been speaking to best-selling author Dan Pink. Dan's book is entitled Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. It actually includes a toolkit that can help you awaken your motivation and also improve the motivation within your company or your group. It can help parents motivate their kids, and it will help you identify gurus that might be able to help you move forward. Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Do you understand the complexities of the coming GAAP to IFRS changeover? AMA's new seminar explores these new guidelines by examining actual financial statements prepared in accordance with IFRS and comparing the principal differences between them and United States GAAP. By taking this seminar, you will not only become familiar with IFRS, but you will be significantly ahead of the pack when the changeover occurs. For more information, visit amanet.org and type 1238 into the search box. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.